Hello and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we discuss some topical leadership issues. This week we're focusing on events up until the 1st of February 2019. My name's Nick Scott. I'm an economist and academic working with the Institute of Leadership and Management, and I'm joined again today by the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Nick.
Our first story this week considers the extent to which firms can better help their staff transition towards retirement. BlackRock chairman Larry Fink expressed concern that modern defined contribution pension plans have resulted in employers dropping some responsibilities they accepted in the 20th century. Employees faced with increasing longevity and uncertain investment returns are feeling anxious and uncertain over their well-being in retirement. And this is undermining productivity in the workplace. So, Kate, do you agree with Fink's assessment and subsequent argument that firms need to be doing more?
I think it's probably got less to do with the change in pension requirements and more to do with the abolition of the statutory retirement age. If people no longer have to retire at a certain age, or they've never had to, of course, but are expected to, the conversations about when you might be thinking about retiring are that much more difficult, because you don't want somebody who has no intention of retiring to think that you're putting pressure on them. I had a conversation with somebody who worked in a law firm who, before, when we did have a statutory retirement age, everybody used to get a letter on their 54th birthday saying, were they ready? So we're not helping people get ready, and there might be many explanations for that, but I definitely agree that preparation for retirement is something that we, all organisations, should be taking seriously.
Jill Miller of the CIPD told HR Magazine that firms need better transitioning plans to avoid the current cliff edge end of active status, which is still the norm, with people reporting worries over boredom, loneliness, loss of purpose, in addition to their financial concerns. So is phased retirement the answer to all of these issues?
It's certainly a solution to the problems of from one day being busy, active, have significance, have meaning in your daily life, to go to somebody who it's all disappeared. There's none of that. And so we need to think of retirement much more as a journey rather than a destination. And how can one transition? And also, how can the organisation retain that knowledge and experience that goes the moment somebody leaves? And too often it's as though that they've disappeared. When we did some research in 2015 at multi-generational working, we did find that older workers would like to think about retirement, but it was a transition that they were looking for. Advice about financial planning, advice about how they can continue to be usefully involved. And one of the things we recommend to our members is thinking about being a trustee of a charity, where you can have so many opportunities to give something back.
Well, in our second story this week, Tesla CEO Elon Musk has generated more negative publicity after announcing 3,000 job losses in mid-January. As Tesla is relatively new and operating in a very competitive environment, he called on staff effectively to work harder, with poorer work-life balance than other companies. Might he have a point, or is this perhaps evidence of rather cynical employment relations practice? If you don't pull your socks up, more of you might face the sack.
One could say, yes, this is a cynical attempt by him to get more for less from the people who are remaining, to take advantage of what must be very unsettling for everybody who works there, that feeling that their jobs are in jeopardy. But a more generous interpretation could be that he works very hard himself. He is a workaholic, and he just wants people like him to work in the organisation, because he can see the greater good. Surely they can.
Well, Quartz at Work criticised the apparent moral grounds that featured as part of Musk's argument. If workers want to change the planet and help the transition from fossil fuels to more sustainable automotive power, then effectively facing poorer working conditions might be a price worth paying. Inc.com reckon Musk may well believe this rhetoric, but is it reasonable to use this as an argument? Can purpose undermine well-being?
It's undoubtedly the case that we will work so much harder for something that we believe in, and people will, as I've just mentioned, sacrifice a certain amount of work-life balance in order to achieve that. But to me, the real test of whether this is a genuine plea to help me save the planet is how the rewards of that endeavour are distributed. And if they are distributed in a way that's fair, equitable, transparent, and is recognising that those people are on the journey with him, well, then he has a strong case.
Our final story this week poses the question, are geniuses bad at collaboration? Tim Brown, CEO of IDEO, speaking at Davos, argued against trying to force geniuses into a collaborative approach that might not suit their drive or character. He argued against employing those who didn't fit the current company culture. This follows on from a recent piece in The Guardian where the Wellcome Trust director, Sir Jeremy Farrar, argued that even in labs of leading scientists, we underestimate how much is the result of teamwork and partnership. Business author Jeffrey James takes an opposite view on Inc.com, saying it's impossible to think outside of the box if you're stuck in the box with a bunch of other people, claiming that there is substantial scientific evidence that rather than spurring creativity, collaboration results in groupthink and mediocrity, and that solitude fosters creativity. So, Kate, is there still a role for the creative genius in modern complex organisations?
This reminds me of the early work of Meredith Belbin, who most of us will know because of the team roles. And no doubt we've all completed a questionnaire at some point in our careers that tell us which team role we prefer. When Belbin was first doing that research, he took the view that the cleverest, the most creative, the geniuses, as we're talking about in this piece, should be identified and put together, and then we would get exceptional results. This didn't happen. In fact, they were counterproductive together because they found it very difficult to work collaboratively. But do we then say, well, let's not have genius? He put forward an idea that great teams need a mix of roles, personalities, behaviours, tasks. It's a very complex, but nevertheless, it's an effective team requires more than a certain type of individual. So yes, I think we do still need geniuses. Maybe not that lone individual coming up with an idea that either is accepted or not accepted by the rest of the group. Because I think often we attribute too much genius to an individual. Well, actually, they're right. Idea might be the spark that leads to the creation of something bigger and something that's owned by a group of people. There's also a responsibility for people to try and work collaboratively, of course. But if you try and eliminate those tensions, those creative differences between people in an organisation, then I think you might get to that place of groupthink. You can disagree with colleagues. You can create an environment where it's okay to disagree, to keep that creative tension, to keep that difference, because it's the wisdom of the difference that will give us the best ideas, and not say we don't want these people here because they're disruptive. Because if anything seems to be true about the future of leadership, is that it's going to have to adapt to new and different all the time, and we cannot protect ourselves from that.
Well, thanks very much, Kate, for those valuable insights. Regrettably, that's all we have time for this week. Please go to the website www.institutelm.com for more information about the Institute of Leadership and Management. And please subscribe to this podcast series, available on the website and via iTunes and Spotify.